Professor Lipstein, we've spoken about the library, and I wonder if we could concentrate today on your own research, a great deal of which was conducted in the library. I gather you were the first academic in the UK to introduce the teaching of EU law. This was a very insightful thing to do, and I wonder what made you take this step, which in retrospect has proved so important.
I wonder myself, but I certainly realized that this was something very new and different from anything that happened before. And that is why I offered to give a course which was non-examinable and open to the whole university on this new treaty. And that it developed, of course, into a course of lectures. And in due course, people really felt they must know something about it, because when this country joined the treaty, lawyers had to know something about it. Only I realized it a little earlier.
And you also published a textbook in 1974 on EU law. Was this the first of its kind?
There were books on it before, on the treaty, especially on its constitutional and judicial aspects and the procedural aspects. Mine did only touch upon that if wherever necessary. I tried to show the effect of the European Treaty and of the subordinate legislation by Brussels on private law in the countries concerned.
In his article in the recently published work Jurists Uprooted, Dr. Forsyth picks out your Hague lectures of 1972. Great scholarship was displayed here, using mainly original sources, and von Baer says that it was the best essay on the development of private international law. Can you recall the circumstances in which you came to give these lectures?
I was invited, and it is always a rather a compliment to be invited by the Curatorium of the Hague Lectures to do so. But what I did was that I fell back on my lectures in Cambridge, perhaps enlarging certain parts of it in order to make them more acceptable to the continental audience. But it was indeed the result of some of my lectures and my work in Cambridge.
And so you went across to The Hague and you stayed there for...
One had to go there for a week or two, I've forgotten how long, and give a lecture a day, and for the rest one was free.
And in that time were you just polishing up the next lecture or...?
Yes, I had to prepare the following day's lecture, yes.
So in 1998 you became the reporter on a commission set up by the Institut des Droits International, which considered the problem of renvoi. Two previous commissions had considered the problem but not resolved it, and according to Dr. Forsyth, your report was a tour de force and a personal triumph.
I never realized it at the time. I went simply about it, systematically, and again relying on my experience as a lecturer in Cambridge. It's true there had been two attempts before to tackle it, but they had both been theoretical attempts. I tried to do the matter in a practical way. And practical and pragmatic, I solved the problem, at least in one way, showing how it could be done, not trying to lay down absolute rules.
And Dr. Forsyth wasn't the first to describe it as a tour de force?
No. Mr. Justice Collins, who attended the lectures, said something very similar.
At the time. Mm. Now, Dr. Forsyth also says that judges do not often acknowledge reliance upon academic work, but Lord Denning used your conclusions on the criteria for recognition of foreign judgments in the case of Hesperides Hotels and Aegean Holidays in 1979. This picked up on an idea which you first developed in the 1950s. Do you think that the following of academic ideas is a desirable thing for judges to do?
If you could write clearly and decisively as to the rules which you are dealing with. If you merely start a long theoretical disquisition, it doesn't help.
So, do you recall how it felt when you this case, this judgment came out and you...
No, I knew that I was on good terms with Dilling, and I knew he was sympathetic with my ways and I was sympathetic with his.
Did you meet him?
Yes, I knew him. A very nice man.
Any recollections particularly?
I don't think so. I think I met him always in an official capacity.
Now, you revisited the area of conflict of laws before international tribunals 60 years later in a paper you wrote in 2002. And according to Dr. Forsyth, you're the leading scholar in this area. What made you go back to this topic 60 years later?
There is a general burden on all teachers, namely to write when some of their colleagues who reach the age of 60, 70 or 80 and get a book in, devoted to their life. You have to find a topic which is not too long and doesn't cover what you're just working on in, on a bigger scale. So I saw that there was more practice, and I knew I had written upon it at length. So I decided to see how this topic had developed over the last 60 years.
And you were appointed by the Lord Chancellor to advise the UK government on the Hague treaties. Was it difficult working with a government department?
The government departments are very practical, and they were not always in sympathy with the international ways I had dealt with.
Did they, by and large, let you get on with it without too
much? I did my work independently. And whether or not I succeeded in getting it translated into English law is another matter. I don't think it is. I think I dealt with the administration of estates.
You've also written on the reception of Western law into Turkey and India, so you must have read widely on these jurisdictions. Although the Squire has reasonable coverage of Indian materials, the Turkish collection is weak. So how did you obtain your materials?
My topic was the reception of Swiss law in Turkey. Therefore, I only had to find out how far Swiss law was taken over in Turkey, and then look how it operated. So it only meant looking at Swiss law in another country.
The Squire has a reasonable Swiss coverage. You appeared before the ICJ in Liechtenstein and Guatemala, the Notre-Dame case. Was it easy to procure material for such a case?
I didn't have to, because the case was prepared by Lauterbach's father, who was at that time still an advocate and not yet judge at the International Court of Justice. I took over from him when he became a judge and couldn't continue. Therefore, I was merely an inheritor.
And as I understand, you procured, after this case, a very beautiful car, which you still have today.
That is correct. And it's known by the name of the case which I argued. But I shouldn't forget that my first work was with Guttridge on unjustifiable enrichment in the conflict of laws, and we both wrote that together. Let's say I prepared it and he supervised it. And that filled the gap in the private international law.
I see. Dr. Forsyth's article in Juris Uprooted concludes that your wealth of experience cannot be achieved again by anybody because you were brought up in the continental tradition and yet spent so much of your life immersed in the common law. Do you think this is a valid point?
Yes, because it means that you have to face people who are willing to change from one country to another and change their lifestyle. It has happened before. After all, Oppenheim moved from Germany and became an English lawyer. And it can happen, but it does happen mainly if they are technical disturbances in the world which force people to change from one country to another. That doesn't happen that often, so there always will be people who change from one system to another, but in this, to the extent that it happened in the 30s and 40s, it's unlikely to happen again.
Is there something lost because academics with such a background are not around anymore?
I'm sure there is. And I've said somewhere that the massive experience which the people brought, who moved in the 30s, 40s and 50s, will not easily be replaced because of this mass movement is most unlikely to happen again.
So, finally, what in your opinion has been the highlight of your academic career?
I aimed at an academic career, therefore of being appointed to Cambridge faculty, the faculty was probably the best and the earliest. Two things which I aimed at in my later life was to have the title of Queen's Counsel and of becoming a member of the Institute of International Law. And I achieved that too, though late in my life. Those three things, I think, were the three highlights.
Thank you very much, Professor.